All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Daily Faceoff podcast comes courtesy of The Nation Network. Here's your host, Brock Segan, with Dylan D. Berthume and Michael Beebs Bondi.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Season 9, Episode 33 of the DFO Fantasy Podcast, presented to you by Betway. If you're going to place a bet on Betway, please play responsibly. Ontario only, must be 19 years of age or older. I'm your host, Brock Segan, and for the first time in a few weeks, we got the tripod back together. We got Dylan D. Berthume and Michael Beebs Bondi with us. No splicing in audio this week. We are all together. D, start with you. How's it going, bud?
Doing good, man. Spent a lot of money to watch the Leafs lose last night, so that was a bit of a bummer, but good times were still had, so can't complain too much, but... Yeah, I guess it's diluted my hockey mood just a little bit, but you know what? I put on for the people. It's why we're professionals here on the DFO Fantasy Podcast.
Yeah, well, Morgan Riley was in the lineup, so you had to know that there was going to most likely be an L. Apparently, that's just how things work in Toronto these days. And Beebs, unlike D, your team put on an absolute ass whooping last night. How are you feeling today?
It did. An ass whooping that caused a trade today. So that's like a earthquake repercussion ass whooping. But I'm also a little down, boys. I got called David Spade today and it hurt. So we're bouncing back, you know. And the worst part was I got called it in a public setting, and then like multiple people were like, "Oh my God, yes." I wasn't really pushing for that today. So I'm trying to bounce back. I'm really bouncing off the funny aspect of being David Spade, but you know, there's better actors to get. Was looking for a Brad Pitt, you know, one of those. But here we are, boys. We are on the mic, so most people can't see us. So that's a positive for my face.
Was it Joe Dirt or what?
I was hoping like a little Dickie Roberts vibe, but I'm not too sure. If it was Joe Dirt, then wow. Gonna have to reassess, shave
you got
the head.
The Joe Dirt stash, right?
Not yet, but I can work on it.
I never really thought about that, but now looking at David Spade, it's an absolute dead ringer. So sorry to make your day get a little bit worse.
It was at the gym, and like they pulled it up on the screen too. So there was like 10 people there, like looking and just pointing, and they all agreed. So now I have.
Yeah,
to,
no, I agree too.
I might go with it. Yeah, I'll start doing some David Spade.
You've got a Halloween costume for the next decade at least.
Did you get like a Jack David Spade at least?
No, it was. That's what I tried. I tried to make jokes, and they're like, "Oh, you're like a." I'm like, "Ah, no one wants David Spade," and they're like, "But he's like a funny uncle." I'm like, "Who wants to be a funny uncle?" But anyway,
it's not the worst thing.
Yeah, it could be a lot worse. Yeah, it could be the creepy uncle. So here we are, funny uncle Biebs here. Energy's back. We've recovered. Let's talk.
Speaking of doppelgangers, really quick, it is hockey related. I met one of my cousin's boyfriends yesterday, and he is an absolute dead ringer for Matt Barzal. I'm like, you a hockey fan? She's like, kind of. I'm like, no, Matt Barzal. It's like, kind of. Like, you look exactly like him. He's like, really? He's like, I always get Rob Gronkowski. I'm like, well, those two people don't look anything alike. So we're going to
so much
Matt
better
Barzal
than David Spade.
So I'm having a really hard time picturing this human all of a sudden.
Yeah, no, he looks exactly like Matt Barzal. He was stretching the Rob Gronkowski thing for sure. He was a dead ringer for Matt Barzal. Everyone agreed with me. But let's get into fantasy hockey as we always do. So yeah, we got the fantasy hockey trade deadline today, which is Wednesday, February the 28th. In most leagues, today is the deadline. So what we did is we pulled Daily Faceoff users, DFO Fantasy Podcast listeners, just to get an idea of some of the trades that went down in the last 24, 48 hours leading to fantasy hockey trade deadlines. We're going to go through them really quick, have a little bit of fun with it, and pick our winners and losers of the trade. We did not get any information as to which side our actual listeners are on, so we don't know if we're picking their side or going against them here. And we do have some settings and stuff we'll talk about based on which, you know, the league formats and stuff like that to get a little bit more background. But we're not going to spend too much time on it. Going to have a little bit of fun. And hopefully, you know, if you submitted one of your trades, you were on the winning side of things. So we'll start with the first one. It's an all-categories keeper league, including bangers. Evander Kane, Matt Zuccarello, Scott Wedgwood in a second round pick goes to Team B for Nikita Kucherov, Rupe Hintz, Jeremy Swayman, and a 10th rounder. I'll start, I suppose. To me, this is an absolute landslide for Team B. Massive upgrade between the pipes, massive upgrades on the wing and at center. So yeah, I mean, it's hard to value what the actual draft picks are worth, but second for 10th doesn't seem like a big enough discrepancy when Kucherov, Rupe Hintz, and Jeremy Swayman are going the other way. D, where do you land on this deal?
Yeah, I'm with you. But again, I think that's going to be a recurring theme is a lot of these trades involving draft picks, and it's hard to know exactly how much value to tie to them without knowing, you know, exactly how the league setup works, how many teams they are, you know, what the if there's a keeper or there is a keepers in this sense. So kind of how if the draft picks are tied to keeper costs, anything like that. But yeah, I would say if you're going to spend a premium pick for next season, being able to upgrade that significantly, pretty huge. And the real reason why I thought it was, you know, pretty decidedly in Team B's favor is that Team A, I mean, normally when you're making a trade that this guy's clearly rebuilding, trading all these pieces away, you'd like to get some young, keepable players back in the mix. And I think Zuccarello is like 48 now. Scott Wedgwood obviously doesn't really offer any long-term value. And Kane obviously just getting further and further away from his prime as well. So I just didn't like the accompanying pieces to that draft pick and to really justify giving up that much.
Yeah, I also go Team B here, fellas. But my thing is, if you're going to give away Kucherov, you got to get a first-round pick to get Kucherov and not use your first. That's where Team B really took it. We're talking about the first player to 100 points here. Guy is on an absolute tear. And like you guys said, that's before even seeing Swayman there. I think Swayman just solidifies that category. I am worried for anyone else who's in the league with Team B because they just did a absolute fleece job here. And you know what? They're going to be scary when playoff time comes around. Although they may have not listened to our strength of schedule episode, grabbing Swayman in the net. But either way, that's a great pickup. Nonetheless, one of the best goalies in the league.
Yeah, I mean, when you're going from Wedgwood to Swayman, I don't think it's the worst thing. Trade number two. We have Matt Duchene and Thomas Harley going along with a second round pick for Zach Hyman, Miro Heiskanen, and a 10th. We do have a little bit more information on the value of picks in this league. Only three keepers. So the second round pick is essentially a fifth. The 10th round pick is essentially a 13th. I'm a little different from you guys. I went with A. I think it's not too big of a drop in terms of Duchene and Harley to Heiskanen and Hyman, where you're adding a pretty decent pick for next season. All things considered, you know, this season, rest of season, I would obviously rather have Hyman and Heiskanen. But the way I looked at this trade was it felt like this was obviously a team that was at the bottom of the league, probably not contending, wasn't going to keep Hyman and Heiskanen, might have a couple of good keepers, and did a pretty good job getting some decent return. Maybe, you know, that second round pick will be decent next year. So I thought it was pretty close, but I went with the Team A option. D, you and Biebs both went with Team B. Why?
Again, I think when you're moving draft picks, you should really be looking to acquire potential keepers alongside with them. Like you said, only three keepers in this league, so maybe that didn't factor in as much. But you know, Harley, very good young blue liner, but I don't expect him to take over for Heiskanen on that top power play unit anytime soon in the coming years, which is where fantasy value primarily comes from for defensemen. As we know, he's also shooting 13% on the season from the back end. Not very sustainable at all, 11.7 on ice shooting percentage. So I think there's some regression there. And I like Hyman a lot more than Duchesne moving forward as a keeper. So I just think you traded away two quality keeper options in the process. So I like, again, the what they were able to acquire for a pretty low cost in the second round pick. So I like it for Team B.
Yeah, I definitely do as well. I went Team B just to, it was nice to see some a little bit of, I thought we'd be agreeing a lot here early. So nice to see on number two. We're different, but no, Team B for me. It's in a way, it's nice to get away from having two Dallas players. If they have a bad week in the playoffs, their schedule's a little down. You now have a Edmonton and a Dallas player in Hyman and Heiskanen. Also, I just see Hyman finish out the year a lot stronger than Duchesne. Duchesne has 1 point in his last six games. Obviously, that's quite, you know, he could also get hot. He had a very hot stretch right before that. But Hyman with McDavid picking it up, McDavid's not going to score for the rest of the year, as we've seen. I'm joking, he is going to, but he is an assist machine right now. And Hyman is feasting. And another thing here, Hyman may actually be in one of those keepable three when it comes down to it, depending on how good this guy's team is. And I don't think any of the other two are there, or any of the other three players in the trade are. So to get a player that's actually potentially keepable, I think is a little bit of a win, even if you are giving up that second pick while going for it. Team B, yet again, get the dub.
The next four or five trades here are all from the same league. They had an absolute trade frenzy on trade deadline day today. So the rules in this league, 14 teams, they keep seven keepers. So very deep keeper pool, pretty standard scoring stats, although hits and blocks are included as well as plus minus. So the first trade is an absolute doozy. Jack Eichel, Luke Hughes, and two first-round picks going from Team A to Team B. And Alex DeBrincat, Mitch Marner, Jacob Chychrun, Sean Monahan, a fifth and a tenth for Team B. So, Biebs, we'll start with you on this one.
Yeah, sorry, thought we were going to have a little bit more of an intro than that going, so I just, you know, and I was letting it sit, making it marinate, but me and D kind of broke the rules here, and we decided to go even for this one. This is one where, without really knowing, you know, what who's being kept, what a keeper value is, what a draft pick value is, it's hard to say, but it just seems so fair across the board. I think with those two first-round picks, that's massive. Obviously, Marner, realistically the best point getter, if that's a word, that's getting moved here, but Eichel is a pretty good keeper to send back. Luke Hughes, I think I like the upside there over Chychrun, and you're kind of just giving away other pieces. Brock, I'm sorry, I don't mean to chirp to Brinkat at all, he's great, he has been very good for me, but I don't value him super high. It's only a keep seven, so he would have probably been on the edge there. So I think it's a good idea to try to get as many picks as you can while getting Eichel while his value's at its lowest. And on the other end, you're getting players that are all, you know, going to give you value right now. DeBrincat, Marner is the best value this year. DeBrincat on the other side, he's scoring, the Wings are a wagon, going to give you great value this year. And then you also, you know, you keep a fifth pick. That's a lot better than getting the ninth and the 10th. So I think that's one thing to notice there. So good little salvaging by Team B. But I think it's a great even trade. And, you know, even trade props to you because they rarely happen. So I will, you know, it's not fun to say, but yeah, even trade. I think D agreed with me on this one, but, you know, maybe I swayed him with just my terrible points. Who knows?
No, I agree. I think, you know, getting the two first round picks, there's a lot of value in there. And again, if this is a league where a keeper value is or the cost is tied to the draft pick, those first round picks become even more valuable. And you see better and better players slide through the keeper process when that does happen. And that's how it kind of felt to me in this league. I mean, we didn't get confirmation on that, but a lot of these picks seem like they're being valued pretty high. So just compared to some of the other ones that we're talking about, to get two firsts, for what essentially to me, like at least from if you're rebuilding, like I don't think you're too concerned about Chychrun or Monahan for next season at all. So I think in the eyes of Team A, you're really looking at it as Eichel and Luke Hughes plus the two first for DeBrincat, Marner, the fifth and the 10th. And I think that's a pretty nice haul. Like I said, getting yourself set up with three first round picks for next year really set yourself up for a nice quick turnaround there. And you got some good keepable assets there in Eichel and Luke Hughes. And then for Team B, obviously, if you're going to go for it, if you're going to move those picks, get some quality players back that can really make a difference week to week. And I think DeBrincat and Marner are certainly that. So I like it from both sides.
Yeah, I guess we do look at the league. It's probably the 99th. Like, the best thing you could get with that pick would be the 99th player off a draft board, because yeah, there's 14 teams, keep seven. So we got 98 kept at that point. So you're at least getting 99 through, let's say, 113 or whatever there, 112. So that's whatever value you find in that. I think that's okay with those two picks. Not, you know, the greatest, but still, you can definitely make some decent picks there, especially in a keeper league. Sorry, Brock, cut you right off.
Well, no, it's all good. I went with Team B. I was unaware that we were going to go cut it down the middle with even trades. But to keep it short, I guess I'm just looking at the way that this league is probably currently sitting, right? Team B obviously looks like a contender. And I don't think that those first-round picks are going to be that valuable. As you pointed out, Beebs is basically a top, you know, the 100th-ranked player. And adding DeBrincat, Marner, Chychrun, and Monahan to a team that's probably loaded with talents already seems like a great move here at the deadline to make a championship push.
Well, counterpoint, like, you know, this guy probably has more than seven really good players. So those first round picks are that much more valuable, right? Because those are the ones where the guys are really going to be sliding through. And again, that's all assuming that there's no keeper costs tied to these keepers for the draft picks, because then the first get even better and better. But yeah, it's not necessarily the 90th overall guy, because there's going to be those for sure higher teams are going to have, you know, some pretty stacked, you know, top 10, 15 guys to choose from when picking their keepers. So those early round picks get all the more valuable, especially in keeper leagues. Like I said, you just kind of see it fall off more and more as you fall off in terms of the value of each round. So I think there's actually potentially a lot of value here, especially with the guy now being set up to have three first rounders.
Yeah, and just back to Team B for a moment. Obviously, you know, Jack Eichel injured. Luke Hughes really not producing that well for a rookie. So not getting a lot of production out of the players that he traded away and added some good names. But I do think I agreed if I could have went even like you guys did, I probably would have. But picking, I went with Team B, and I think that they've got a good chance of taking the championship in this league based on my minimal knowledge of what's going on. Next trade, really quick. Tuukka Teravainen and a third for Mason Marchment and a sixth. Again, I was different than you guys in this one. I went Mason Marchment in the sixth. Tuukka Teravainen is basically unrosterable at this point. He's spent some time on the fourth line, moves to the top line occasionally, hasn't really done a whole lot. Mason Marchment's been very, very good on that Dallas second line. So to me, you know, Teravainen is what he is at this point. He's old and doesn't do a whole lot at this point. And I think Mason Marchment's actually pretty valuable looking at these leagues settings. So, D, why'd you go with Teravainen?
I think I'm just not as sold on Marchment being that valuable, especially year to year. And I think it was a pretty cheap upgrade to move up for the draft. I didn't really see a whole lot of value in Teravainen either. But to be honest, I don't know if their production is going to be that far off. It matters where Teravainen falls in that lineup for sure. But I think Marchment's due for some regression, whether it happens this season or going into next year. But he's shooting 16.4%, 13.5 on-ice shooting percentage, plays less than 15 minutes a night. So yeah, I just don't love Marchment, even in banger leagues where, you know, it helps supplement his value a little bit. I think it was a pretty cheap upgrade for him to move up to the sixth round and to the third round, which again, you're maybe still getting some of those players that snuck through the keeper process and aren't in that true, just kind of like you said, like 100th to 120th ranked overall player. So yeah, I thought it was a nice cheap upgrade and potentially a move that a guy could have made while still contending this year, setting himself up nicely for next season.
Yeah, realistically, he picked up Mason Marchment, what, like a month and a half ago, maybe a little bit longer. But at that point, you moved up three rounds in a 14-team league that only has seven keepers. That's pretty good. I'm kind of with D here. I think that the value overall is just too good there. Yeah, Teravainen's probably bottom of your roster, but you could have did worse. You could have had a guy that you are dropping. I mean, he's probably your next guy. Regardless, it's a good trade. It's a good trade overall, but yeah, I have to give it to Team A. I just love that moving up the board. That's going to be big for next year. And you realistically, this was just another guy on your team that you picked up. So
quick little lightning round here. Team A gets Roman Josi and a ninth round pick. Team B gets Sebastian Aho and a fourth. All three of us went with Team A getting Roman Josi and the ninth. Think you guys would agree with me. It's just the fact that centers are so much deeper than defensemen. Getting Josi really solidifies. He's obviously an elite player. you know, at his position, where Aho's very, very good, but probably a bit of a downgrade. Do you guys have anything to add quickly on why you went with Team A?
No, just that, you know, I would think that the full rosters for each team probably paints a clearer picture. Maybe it helped out each other a little bit more if one team is deeper on the blue line than the other, and then one needed help up front. But yeah, I agree. I think Yossi, his top end talent at the position is too good to ignore.
Yeah, Team and A. The value of goals too, I think. Sorry, just with Yossi, he's one of the top scoring defensemen in the league. That in itself, goals are worth 6 here. Assists are worth 4. Boom, just the goals in itself. He's got 14 this year. He loves to shoot. Go ahead on the next one there, Brock.
Team A, John Carlson and a 12th round pick for Team B's Oliver Ekman-Larsson and a 7th round pick. Again, all three of us were on Team A getting John Carlson and a 12th. I think, you know, obviously the fact that he is the top end defenseman on that team, he's the top power play quarterback on that team, means a lot. 7th round pick versus 12th round pick in a deeper keeper league like this doesn't make a huge impact to me. John Carlson, also the Capitals seem to be turning things around a little bit right now, which is obviously pretty good. Next, we actually agree on a lot of these trades moving forward. We got Elias Lindholm, Jacob Trouba with a 4th, going for Mika Zibanejad and a 14th round pick. All three of us were on board with Team B getting Mika Zibanejad and a 14th round pick. D, you're a guy that owns Mika Zibanejad in a lot of leagues. Why do you like trading for him, getting rid of Lindholm, Trouba, and a 4th?
Well, I mean, based off the other trades in this league, like I think getting Zibanejad for just a 4th, when you look at, like, you know, Monahan or Marner and DeBrincat basically each cost a 1st, if that's how you want to break that trade down. Obviously, they got a 5th and a 10th back in that one, so it's a little bit different in that sense. But yeah, I think that's such a good price for Zibanejad. I just don't love Lindholm and Trouba this year. I think they're both pretty replaceable. Even for Trouba, in a league that rewards hits and block shots, if you're talking defensemen, that's stuff that can be easily replaced on the waiver wire for someone as one-dimensional in Trouba. It doesn't really offer you a lot of offensive upside. I don't love Lindholm's role in usage that we've seen out of him in Vancouver so far. And obviously, Zibanejad still got some prime years left in him. So still a great keeper candidate, and your team got demonstrably better this season without sacrificing the top 3 pick for next year. So I thought it was well done, especially when you look at the rest of the trades in this league and what the draft picks were going for.
At any point, you're always looking to get the best player on the board, and you got the best player on the board with Zibanejad. Like you said, you didn't have to give up that much by that many rounds. And some people are just confident in their draft game. So I got to feel that Team B is, and he now has a way better keeper. I like Zibanejad a lot.
Kudos to that league. I mean, that's a pretty eventful trade deadline. We're going to move on here. A couple more trades that we all agree on. Some rapid fire. Next one was Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen for Brandon Hagel. Pretty standard format in this league. We all like the Brandon Hagel side of things. I think the fact that he has been recently playing on the top line with Braden Point and Nikita Kucherov is a huge factor. Also, I don't think things can get much better for Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen than they have been recently. And then the fact that the Sabres could be, you know, sellers at the deadline could really hurt Luukkonen's value moving forward. So I do think that cashing in, that's a nice sell high on Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, somebody that you definitely picked up off the waiver wire that turned in some very good starts, maybe helped win a couple weeks, and then turning him into a productive winger was a nice play. The next trade, Team A gets Ovechkin and Chris Letang. Team B gets Steven Stamkos. So a 2-for-1, but it opened up a roster spot for the team acquiring Stamkos to activate Miro Heiskanen. You always have to factor those things in. But we still all really liked what Team A got in Ovechkin and Letang. I think Ovechkin and Stamkos have been pretty even lately. Stamkos has been a bit disappointing as of late, especially the fact that he's played quite a bit on that top line, loading up the top line in Tampa Bay has not worked as well for Steven Stamkos as it has for Braden Point and Nikita Kucherov. But he's currently sitting at 24 goals, 27 assists, 51 points in 58 games. He's definitely still had a better year overall than Ovechkin. But moving forward, I didn't mind getting Ovechkin and Letang for Stamkos. Do you guys have anything to add before we get to our final few trades here?
I just want to super quick shoot back to that UPL trade. Like you said, if Buffalo becomes sellers, Devon Levi waiting comes up, he's going to get starts. That's all I wanted to say. Great trade to get Hagel. I love that one. But I think you nailed it, Brock. Way to rapid fire. Let's get into some more spicy ones that we didn't agree on.
Next, we have Tage Thompson getting traded for Juraj Slafkovský and Pavel Buchnevich. This one didn't specify if it was a keeper league or not, which I think would have had major impact. The fact that they didn't tells me that it's probably a redraft league, and I was on the side of Slafkovský and Buchnevich. Slafkovský's come on really, really strong. Buchnevich has basically outplayed Tage Thompson. Moving forward next year, if this was a keeper league, I think I might change my tune a little bit, and Tage does look like the guy that you'd want into next season. But, I mean, Slafkovský's been great. Buchnevich has been great. If Buchnevich loses value in a potential real-life trade, that could have an impact here. But if this is a redraft league, I think that, you know, this wasn't really – you know, the best job. We were saying, like, we need to buy low on Tage Thompson right now. I think that's good buy low. I think Slafkovský and Buchnevich might have been a little bit too pricey for my liking. But, D, you were on the side of Tage Thompson here. Tell us why.
I'm just happy to keep betting on Tage to bounce back and get that positive regression we've been calling for. The shots are there. Scoring chances are there. Just hasn't been converting as his usual rate. I think Slafkovský's really cooled off of late. He's pointing this in his last four, just four shots on goal in that span. So I'm not sure how reliable he will be rest of season. I like Buchnevich, but he's had to rely on a 15% shooting percentage and 11.9 on-ice shooting percentage just to get to 47 points in 56 games. He's on a heater lately, so I think they actually did a nice job of selling high here. For me, there's just not enough power play production out of the Blues this season. I think you got the best player in the trade in Tage, and you kind of alluded to it earlier, Brock, but opening up a roster spot offers a lot of flexibility, allows you to be a lot more active in streaming off the waiver wire, which can bring in a lot more value week to week. So I'm always a fan of doing two-for-ones when you get the best player and a potential premium player back like Tage Thompson, which is what I think they did here. So I'll go with Tage.
Yeah, I couldn't get excited for Tage enough on this one. I'm actually on the side with Brock. I go with the 2-for-1 team, and I rarely do. As I mentioned, you usually want the best player in the deal. But actually, since the turn of the new year, both of these players have put up better points than Tage. 19 points for Buchnevich in 22 games since the turn of the calendar. And then as far as Slafkovský, 17 points in 23 games. As far as Tage, only 13 points in 21 games since we've seen 2024. So technically you're getting more value out of those guys already, each in their own. I think it's just too much. And I just don't really love what Buffalo's doing going forward this year. Like you said, if it's a keeper league, I think Tage is a clear winner here. But also Slafkovský, if he gets hot again, that line was showing it can cook, but it is cold, very cold right now. But he's still shooting a lot. Love to see that. Buchnevich also very hot lately, and St. Louis is rolling. So yeah, Team B, you got my vote on that one. Tage, you're just not doing it for me right now.
Yeah, Montreal needs to score on the power. Montreal one needs to score on the power play because they can't really get the job done at 5v5. Okay, these next two trades we've all agreed on one side. This one's a redraft 12 team league with standard categories. Team A, Caulfield, DeBrincat, and Kempe. Team B, Panarin and Toffoli. I was originally this morning on the side of Team A getting Caulfield, DeBrincat, and Kempe, but it really does sound like Adrian Kempe is going to be sidelined for an extended period of time. So when you look at this deal as just Caulfield and DeBrincat for Panarin and Toffoli, if Kempe is going to be out, then I think that you have to side with Team B. I feel like your guys' feelings are similar.
Oh, absolutely. Let's say, I mean, who's a hypothetical player we could put there for Kempe, just to make this one fair when it was sent? I don't know. A point per game. Say even Hagel. Nick Schmaltz is there. Fine. I'm still taking Team B across the board. Even if Kempe was healthy, Panarin is just such a wagon here. You're getting a top five producer in points. You're only giving up Caulfield and DeBrincat, two players who really don't excite me that much, especially in a redraft league. Two guys who are way below a point per game. Meanwhile, Panarin's way above another one, and you're getting Toffoli too. He's got 25 goals in 58 games. He is goal hungry. It's not even that bad. He's basically the same production as Caulfield, so you can cross that out. You traded Panarin for DeBrincat and Nick Schmaltz. Damn.
I agree. I think Toffoli, I mean, you could realistically look at him and Caulfield as probably one of the same moving forward. I'd rather have Toffoli personally. So yep. I kind of more looked at it as like a DeBrincat and Kempe, even if with a healthy Kempe for Panarin. And again, that's just a no-brainer for me. To Biebs's point, it's just not easy to get those premium players. You're going to get so much more value out of that single roster spot than any of the other three that you sent the other way. And again, you just open up a lot of roster flexibility for yourself in the process. So I always like getting the premium player in these kind of 2-for-1, 3-for-2 type deals.
It seems like lately, especially whenever we talk about a player on this podcast, like we do this at night while the games are happening, those players start doing something, whether it's good or bad. The other night we're talking about how we like Nico Daws and he was getting shelled. Earlier we talked about Zach Hyman. He scored a goal as I looked at my phone. Now we're talking about Artemi Panarin. He added an assist on an empty netter and then scored on an empty net back-to-back to give him three more points this evening. So if you ever need a fantasy player to go off, just tweet us about him prior to a recording. We'll talk about him live, and then he will almost certainly do some good. The second to last trade here we all agreed on as well. It was Tyler Seguin straight up for Joseph Woll. It is a 12-team points league head-to-head, pretty standard with slight bangers. I went with Team B. You guys went with Team B as well. To me, you guys know me. I was a big fan of Joseph Woll coming into the season, and I really like what he offers moving forward. I do think that he could come back and be the number one in Toronto's crease, and they are still a team that has gotten solid goaltending, just not elite goaltending. And Joseph Woll maybe could provide that moving forward. So I think that, you know, at a pretty cheap cost, you added a potentially really strong goalie for the finish of the season. D, you are our resident Maple Leafs fan. Tell us why you like Joseph Woll here.
Honestly, if Sagan was healthy, I'd probably go the other way on this one. The fact that he's going to be out week to week, kind of a murky timeline on when he's going to be return to the Stars lineup. That was enough for me to go with Woll, but I do think it's going to take some time for Woll to really work back. And again, Samsonov's played well enough that I still think they're going to be splitting starts down the stretch, especially with Woll coming off an injury. So I don't know if we get to the end of the fantasy season or the regular season where Woll's, getting the dominant share of the starts. So I don't know how much value you're actually adding week to week in a head-to-head league like this with Joseph Woll. He's certainly worth rostering and basically giving up someone that, we don't know if he's going to come back healthy and Sagan in time to give you much impact this fantasy regular season, then that's what pushed it for me. But I'm a little more tempered with Woll just because I don't think he's going to just walk back into the lion's share of the role there.
And in the final trade of the night, we have Carter Verhaeghe and Mackenzie Weegar along with a fifth round pick going for Owen Tippett, Jeremy Lauzon, and a first round pick. Didn't think we'd talk about Jeremy Lauzon very often on this podcast, but it is a league with hits and blocks, so it does carry a little bit more value there. I went with Team A, and so did you, Biebs. I just really like Carter Verhaeghe. I absolutely love Owen Tippett, but in this league, it's only four keepers, and I think that as much as anybody likes Owen Tippett, I think he would still be fairly difficult to say he would definitely be in your top four keepers. So, adding the first round pick to me suggests that this team's probably not very good and Tippett will be a keeper for them. So for that, I look at this kind of just being like, yeah, we're getting Tippett as a keeper and a first round pick. So I do think it's a pretty good trade for Team B. Again, this is probably one of the ones I would have went with a little bit more even. I had a hard time deciding on this one, but moving forward, I think Carter Verhaeghe this season provides a little bit more value. And I don't think any of these guys are probably going to be getting kept. But Biebs, you were with me on this one, Team A. Why do you like it a little bit better?
Yeah, we were talking earlier, Kucherov couldn't get a one. So Carter Verhaeghe getting a first. Well done, Team B. But I had to give it to, obviously, Team A. You need to make a push, and you picked up someone who's going to help you in all categories. Carter Verhaeghe, proven it time and time again. He's going to score. He's going to put up a point per game. He's going to have positive plus minus. He's going to shoot the puck. So I just like this move a lot. I think Weegar, obviously, you're buying high, very high, but that's okay too. If he can help you for the rest of the year, he's one of the pieces that is going to stay in Calgary. So he's probably going to be one that they, give a lot of ice time to, let him go off, be their new guy. So yeah, I like that. And you still have the fifth, which when you're keeping four, that fifth round pick is still pretty nice. Would have saw a lot of people, look to the end of their draft and take one of those picks. So it's good that you still got the five. But yeah, well done to both teams here, but Team A, you squeaked this one out, but D, you were a little bit indifferent, I believe. So,
yeah, I do think, especially in this kind of setup, like Tippett can bring close to as much value as Verhaeghe. He's just such a monster in these extended category leagues. He's really just a category filler. He's, almost four shots a game this season, a couple hits a game as well. So he adds a lot of value in banger leagues. And first round picks, like, they're just so valuable, even in keeper leagues with a diluted player pool. And here we only have four players being kept per team. I think Weegar to Lauzon is a pretty it's more lateral than maybe people realize in a league like this. Again, it's those hits and block shots that is a big chunk of Weegar's value in this sort of setup. It's easier to replace on the blue line, I just love the value that you can get from Tippett. I think Verhaeghe's fantastic, but I think you got really good value for him. To me, more than worth the slight downgrade to Tippett given the fact that you grabbed an extra first rounder for next season. And who knows? This, to me, didn't scream like a team that's rebuilding. It could just be a nice, savvy move, and maybe they needed a little more help than shots in the hits category, and Tippett certainly brings that in abundance.
that is going to do it for your, I guess, trade fantasy hockey trade deadline listener recap. I don't know how to title that one, but when we get back, we're going to take a look ahead at the real life NHL trade deadline as well. As always, we've got D's keepers coming up and the Betway bets of the day. So enjoy a quick break. We will be back here in about 30 seconds.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Season 9, Episode 33 of the DFO Fantasy Podcast, presented to you by Betway. Before I get to the Betway Bets of the Day, I'd just like to apologize for saying D's Keepers. We actually have D's Streamers coming up in the second half of the show, as always. D's Keepers could be something that we talk about at the end of the year when the streamers are over and we break down D's expansive keeper list of 300 players. So D, you better start studying, get your homework done. But yeah, let's get to the Betway bets of the day. Reminder, if you're going to place a bet, bet on Betway. Please play responsibly. Ontario only, must be 19 years of age or older. I think it would be silly of me not to back my Detroit Red Wings, who are on an absolute heater right now. They are currently sitting at minus 115 at home against the New York Islanders, who cannot play defense against anybody. So how are they going to stop the hottest offense in the league? I do not know. Minus 115 suggests that the Islanders are actually small favorites in this game, but the Red Wings got the home ice advantage. So I don't really see how the Islanders could be favorites in this game. So yeah, minus 115 home ice. I absolutely love the Red Wings. I also really like the over in that game as well. The Red Wings scoring a ton of goals. The Islanders not very good defensively, but they do have a pretty good offense of their own. I would be lying to you if I say that the Red Wings are great defensively. They've just been getting outstanding goaltending from Alex Lyon. James Reimer, to his credit, was also pretty solid. They have a 960 save percentage, over a 960 save percentage in the last six games during the six-game winning streak. So maybe some regression there. So I'll go over six. It's currently plus 105 on Betway. So give me the Red Wings minus 115 and over 6.5 plus 105. And then the final game of the night, I like the Pittsburgh Penguins. Still playing pretty well. One of the better 5v5 teams in the league. Just needs to still get that power play going to a certain degree. Currently sitting at plus 100 on the road against the Seattle Kraken. Dealing with some injuries right now, to be sure. But coming off a big win in Vancouver the other night, I think they can do the same in Seattle tomorrow. So I like the odds, plus 100. Give me the Pittsburgh Penguins. And those are the Betway bets of the day. Thank you guys so much. Let's take a look now at the trade deadline, the real NHL trade deadline. We're going to take a look at some of the names that are fantasy relevant, on Frank Saravalli's trade targets board over at dailyfaceoff.com. And just do a quick look at, will these players, or do these players, I guess, have any chance of their value going up in a trade, or are they only likely headed for a downgrade? And if your fantasy trade deadline is not today and you have some of these players that are due for potential downgrades, it might be time to move them. I know there's a couple leagues that have their deadline on Friday. So if you're listening, you still might not be at the deadline yet. So let's start with Noah Hanifin, one of the top defensemen available on the trade market. I guess before we dive in here, we should just mention, you know, I'm sure everybody's already heard about it, but Chris Tanev traded from the Calgary Flames to the Dallas Stars for a 2024 second round pick and a conditional draft pick in 2026. It'll be a third if the Stars make it to the Stanley Cup Finals this year. They also gave up a low-level prospect. The New Jersey Devils were also involved acquiring a fourth round pick to become to retain 25%. So overall, the Stars end up with Chris Tanev at 75% retained. So the Flames obviously selling. Noah Hanifin is one of the top names on Frank Saravalli's trade targets list. Do you think that his trade value or fantasy value can go up with a trade, or is it only destined to go down? Currently playing on the top pair in Calgary and usually on the second power play unit. D, we'll start with you, Noah Hanifin. Stock up or stock down?
I think it goes down. I think he makes whatever team he ends up on way, way better. I think he's a fantastic defenseman, but just not a guy that traditionally sees a lot of time on the power play. Usually been more out of necessity in the past when he does get that time. So it's hard to imagine him going to a contender where he would, you know, be in the conversation, potentially move up to the top power play unit, which is, I think, the only way that we really see his value from a fantasy perspective improve. So I'm going to go stock down, and I think he's due for a little bit of regression as well, shooting 9.3% on the back end. So he's been a nice little story so far in fantasy leagues, but to me, it's just a guy who offers so much more value in real hockey than in fantasy hockey.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think you got to move him if you have him, because I'm going stock down. Playoff teams, they have solidified power plays. They have solidified most things. They're just adding pieces into the puzzle. Likely the pieces that are missing in the puzzle aren't first line defensemen and all that. So yeah, Hanifin stock down. You know, get trade your chips while they're still gold and not bronze. So there you go. That little advice from Beavs.
Yeah, like I think he's going to maybe be a top pairing defenseman wherever he goes, like he is now. So that's going to be probably a lateral move, and at best he's going to be second power play unit. So I think it's either going down or it'll stay
a huge value.
Yeah, it'll stay pretty similar to what it is now. Next is Jake Guentzel of the Pittsburgh Penguins, currently injured, but obviously a focal point of this trade deadline, and he is a focal point of the Pittsburgh Penguins offense, top line with Sidney Crosby all year, top power play unit. To me, like, I don't know what situation he goes into that's better than playing with Sidney Crosby, right? Like, the chemistry's there. It's been like years where they played together and they've been magical together. I just don't really see him improving his value, but I do think that if Jake Guentzel gets moved, it's going to be a team that is really needy for a winger in their top six. Obviously, you know, if he lands in Edmonton, there's lots of chatter there. Like, does he end up on Connor McDavid's wing? Maybe, right? So I think that there's a chance that Guentzel's value stays similar, but I don't think it can possibly go up. D, what do you think?
I do think it can go up. I mean, Pittsburgh's got the fifth worst power play in the league this season, and his power play production has been slashed because of that. So I think there's potential for that to really improve. And I think the price that he's going to command, I'm not convinced he does get traded. The fact that he's going to get to submit it, or he does get to submit a 12-team no trade list as well. I just think it's going to be too difficult. I'll be surprised. I'll be happy because it means fireworks and, you know, it's always fun, but I would just be surprised if that does end up happening. But I think the price is going to be so significant that, yeah, whoever moves for him is going to obviously be looking to play him, and as premium of a position as he already plays with for the Penguins. Maybe not quite 21 minutes a night, but certainly 19, 20. I think he'll be right up around there. And if he lands on, it doesn't need to be the Oilers, but if he lands on a team with just a functioning power play, you know, that alone is going to do wonders for his production. So I'm not really worried about trading for Guentzel, and I do think it could even improve if he is to be moved.
Yeah, I'm on the same page. I think it kind of makes it parallel because I'm right there with you, Brock. It's almost like a salad of your guys' points. Like, I think that him leaving Pittsburgh, the chemistry thing could hurt him, but that better power play could kind of level out the playing field there. I'm a little worried that we might see a Timu Meier-like situation from last year where he kind of lost a lot of value at the end of the year. At the same point, though, I don't know. Like we've kind of seen this has been one of Jake Guentzel's best seasons, so it's hard to think, you know, even in a newer position, if he could do better. But that power play certainly would go a long way, but it's gonna be interesting with that injury for sure.
Yeah, I think it would take a real crazy trade for him to end up in a spot where he's like relegated to the third like Timo Meier was. I just don't see that happening, but I do think
I'm just worried like the production in that way.
Could, yeah, for sure. It. Like, I mean, obviously, man, like I don't think we can understate how important chemistry is, and him and Sidney Crosby have it in abundance. So
he's never played anywhere else.
The power play, man, has been so bad. I just still can't figure that out. It's been so good for years. And they had Erik Karlsson, and it just magically gets worse. They move Chris Letang up there. It still sucks. But anyways, let's move to the Anaheim Ducks. Adam Henrik is number 3 on this list. Biebs, we'll start with you. Stock up or stock down if Adam Henrik gets moved?
Oh, definitely stock down. He's been kind of like one of the cooler stories of fantasy hockey, actually having quite a bit of value this season. But Adam Henrique is realistically at heart a third line center. We've seen it the last couple seasons in Anaheim, which is a much weaker team, even if he has been their second or just moved around. But he's not a first line left winger or first line or even realistically top six player wherever he does move. Henrique is just a fantastic third line center, and he's going to go there and he's going to do that and it's going to be good, but he's not going to play on the power play and he's not going to be up in that top. Well, he might be in the top six. He could be a second line center, but even still, without that top power play time, without that 20 minutes of usage that he's getting on some nights, you know, it's going to go down. So poor, sorry, Henrique. It's really cool to see what you did and how you're bouncing back, but this might be it for your fantasy value for a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it really can get better for him. I think the usage is due to take a hit, to Beavs' point. And yeah, it's a guy, it's not going to cost, you know, as much of a premium position. I think a lot of contending teams can be in a spot where they can afford to add Henrique and really just strengthen out the depth of their lineup, just like Beavs is saying. And he's got 19 points in his last 20 games, playing just under 19 minutes a night in that time, first line, first power play unit. And that's just not going to be the case when he moves to a contending team. So I do think he can bring a lot of value with him, but from a fantasy perspective, I can't imagine it's going to be close to what it's been over the last month or so when he's been red hot and nearly a point per game.
Yeah, I think like most likely it's going down. I think maybe he could be a streaming target still, depending on where he lands in the lineup. A lot of rumors for about maybe the Edmonton Oilers being interested. To me, he most likely ends up on the third line with Ryan McLeod. You see a guy like Warren Fogle move up if they don't make a huge splash, and Fogle's played well in the top six this season. So yeah, I don't imagine that Henrique has a ton of value moving forward if he gets dealt. Riley Smith is next. A lot of chatter about him potentially getting moved back to Vegas. I mean, his value is pretty much as low as it's been throughout his career, so you'd have to think that it can only go up. But he's been placed in a premium position in Pittsburgh and has not done a whole lot with it. So even if he does get moved, I don't see Riley Smith being that relevant in fantasy. He hasn't really been that relevant for a couple seasons now, really. He's been solid and a nice streamer, but I mean, just 26 goals, 56 points a season ago was fine. 10 goals, 15 assists this year has been terrible. Beebs, back to you. Riley Smith, stock up or stock down if he gets dealt?
Got to be stock up. Can't get much worse, like you said. Mm-hmm. I mean, up half a point per game is not good. That's not fantasy value. So maybe he gets some more streaming value at this point, though. I'm not even streaming him most nights. It's just there's nothing there. You got to hope that something, a move creates a resurgence in him, or just, you know, maybe just being around different players gets him back. But he's definitely better than, you know, a 41 point guy across an 82 game season. So hopefully it goes up. That'd be cool to see. And he could definitely be a little fit nicely in someone's top six there.
Yeah, I think going back to Vegas makes a lot of sense for all parties, but I certainly think it can get a lot better. I already talked about, you know, the power play and how that's really just crushed everyone's production in Pittsburgh this year, or at least the upside there. And Riley Smith's barely gotten a sniff with Crosby this year. He's played just 40 minutes with them. He's played over 500 with Malkin, who's obviously not as effective of a play driver. And that 16 minutes a night isn't going to be tough to replicate. So I think he could end up in a situation that gives him a little bit more opportunity to produce that 5v5, obviously on the power play as well. With similar ice time. So I do think he kind of creep back into some fantasy relevance. But yeah, it's not a guy that I'm like stashing on my bench right now, hoping he gets moved, because I don't think it'll be that substantial, even when it does inevitably, yeah, in my opinion, go up.
No, I'm right there with you.
Next is Jacob Markstrom from the Calgary Flames. To me, goalies are a little bit easier to judge because if he gets moved, he's going to be going to a goalie needy team and most likely be their number one moving forward. And I think it's pretty easy to suggest that Jacob Markstrom's value will go up because he's going to probably be seeing a similar workload to what he's seeing now on a better team. If he goes to New Jersey and starts the same amount of games as he is currently in Calgary, I think obviously that Markstrom's value goes up. I don't really see a situation in where his value goes down. I think it's either going to be lateral or it's going to go up marginally. D, what do you think?
Yeah, I think you're definitely right. I think he's just bound to get some more goal support, particularly, with the Devils there. I think that could be a really nice spot. 3.32 goals a game as opposed to 3.14 out of Calgary. So that's a pretty significant difference. It probably amounts to him picking up an extra win each week or so. So I think that could be a pretty nice spot for him. The problem is with these guys, there's just not really usually a whole lot of contending teams that are in the market for a goalie. If you've been struggling in net all season long, you're probably not in a really good spot to be making contending moves at a deadline. So I think that's the issue here. So I'm not quite convinced that it happens. There's usually just not that big of a market for it. But if it does, I'm with you. There's no way it gets worse.
Let's say that he doesn't get moved from Calgary. He almost becomes unownable to me just because we're watching guys move out. We just saw Chris Tanev go. We're going to see Noah Hanifin go. He was at the top of this list. It's not going to get better for Markstrom in Calgary defensively. I'm not saying, you know, drop him if he doesn't get traded, but it does get scary. So you do have to hope that he does. It's because things aren't going to get better. They're not going to get better defensively with two guys from the AHL now in their lineup. It's not how it works.
Replacing Chris Tanev with Jordan Oesterle is probably not going to make them better defensively. I think another team that's kind of interesting and could be in the mix is like an LA Kings, right? Like this team looks like they're kind of on the cusp, and great goaltending from Cam Talbot at the start of the year. Dave's giving them some pretty good starts, but I don't think that they feel terrific heading into the playoffs trying to make a cup push with those two guys, and that's a team that's still very good defensively that could really help Jacob Markstrom's value. But that's a great point, Beebs. Like, it's probably going to get worse if he does stay in Calgary. Okay, a couple other names that seemingly some of these are more likely to move than others. Pavel Buchnevich seems unlikely to move. I think you guys would agree with me that his value can only go down, really. Like, he's already playing massive minutes on the top line. He's playing on the top power play. Like, obviously, he could go to a team with a much better power play, similar to Jake Guentzel. So it's possible. But like, I don't know if I'm sitting here with Pavel Buchnevich and saying like, man, I really want him to get traded when he's currently playing on the top line with Robert Thomas, who's having an outstanding season. And I guess there's no guarantee that he would be on the team's top power play unit if he gets traded there. I'm sure, you know, it's probable, it's likely, but it's not a guarantee. So I have my reservations if I'm a Buchnevich owner that I actually want him to get dealt. D, what do you think?
I do think like a change in scenery on that power play could help out a lot and maybe offset some of the aggression that I think is coming his way. Because like I said, he's been rather fortunate just to be able to produce the clip that he's at so far this season. But yeah, I think it's you're threading a pretty tight needle there. And like again, though, he's got an extra year on his contract, so this isn't going to be a cheap price. I think anyone that's looking to add is going to have a significant need for him. So I would not be surprised if he ends up somewhere there. He does settle into a spot on the top power play unit. As long as management and coaching are aligned, like you're not going to move what it takes to get a Buchnevich to play him in your middle six, right? So that's kind of where I'm sitting on. I think if he does get moved, it could be a spot like maybe the Hurricanes somewhere that has an opening for a top line winger, and a spot where he could potentially do a lot of work. Maybe your Detroit Red Wings as well, Brock, if they want to really make a big push. I think that's a nice piece for them considering the fact that he's under contract for another year as well. But again, we got him, modified no movement, another 12-team no trade list, just makes it all the more difficult for him to get moved. So not convinced it happens, but I think as long as coaching and management are aligned, I think he does see a pretty big role if he does get moved somewhere.
Yeah, St. Louis only 6 points out of a playoff spot right now, and they're have two less games played than the team they are chasing. So they're kind of still in the hunt. I'm with you guys. Booch likely won't move, and if he does, I don't love it. But he's playing like 20 plus every night. That's tough to replicate on good teams.
He would look terrific in Detroit. I'd absolutely love that deal. I was talking to one of my buddies the other day, and that's definitely somebody that I'm interested in if the Red Wings decide to be buyers at the deadline, and it's looking more and more likely as they continue to win hockey games. Jacob Chychrun of the Ottawa Senators seems to just always be on the trade board. Like, this man's entire existence in the NHL has been as a trade target. And, you know, I think that he was a player that we were all extremely high on. I mean, the goal production in 2020 and 2021, the shot volume was insane. And then he lands in Ottawa, and it looks like this is going to be a splash year for him. And it's really just been pretty okay. 30 points in 57 games. The injuries are still kind of a concern for him, but like very rarely on the top power play unit. Jake Sanderson's really solidified himself as the top PP guy in Ottawa, and his value just has not really been there. I think it would be difficult for his value to move a lot. Like, I think it'll probably be very similar to what it is now. Like, I think it would be kind of a similar trade to like Noah Hanifin moving, right? probably still going to play big minutes in the top four of a team that he goes to. He's probably still going to be on the second power play unit, but like, I don't see it getting significantly better. I think it's probably going to stay pretty similar to what it is now. Biebs, what do you think?
Yeah, you nailed it. I'm more just like trying to get past the words of how heartbroken I kind of am from Chychrun here, because I was one of those believers. I thought, you know, he was going to be healthy. He was going to shoot a ton. He was going to do it all. But here we are talking about a guy with 30 points and we're almost in the fantasy playoffs. So, I don't know. It's I think this is going to be a trade that maybe someone, it is definitely someone whose ceiling is so high that you should keep an eye on where they go. And you don't see many defensemen who can flirt with 200 shots in a season. So that's phenomenal. But yeah, I'm not, you know, I'm not getting all jumpy like I am over some of these other names. But like you said, Chychrun, he's either on the trade block or on the IR. So there's no in between, I don't think, with this guy.
Yeah, I think the difficult part here for his fantasy value to go up, I think some of the best potential landing spots are in division, which makes the trade pretty unlikely to happen. Namely, like the Maple Leafs have shown to not be, or Keith himself shown not to be totally married to Morgan Rielly being on the top power play unit. We saw Eric Gustafson come in a season ago and get some time there. And we saw it in the past with Tyson Barry making a move for him to potentially come and take back Rielly's role. And they kind of just always fall back to defaulting to have Morgan Rielly back in that spot. So I do think if he were to go to the Maple Leafs, like there's potential for him to take a very lucrative spot there. I just don't think the Sens ever make that deal with the Leafs. And again, your Red Wings, Brock, like if he ends up on that top power play, like Shane Gostisbehere is not that tough to supplant. And I think that could be a really nice spot for him as well. But again, it being in division makes it pretty unlikely. And all the other spots, I really do think that that number one power play spot is really accounted for, and it's going to be tough to bump anyone else out. Maybe Boston, they've shown not to love McAvoy there in the past either. So that's another potential spot, I guess, where we could see some upside from a contending team in terms of making room for Chychrun on their top power play. But again, we're talking in division, so it just makes the trade less and less likely to happen. I think if he does get moved, it's going to be, like you guys say, more of a lateral move, because I just don't think it's going to be really an open spot for him to move into the top power play role on what's going to be an above average power play.
Yeah, the way the Red Wings roll out their power play with kind of two even units, it doesn't even really matter which unit you land on there. You're either playing with Larkin on the top unit, 1A, or you're playing with DeBrincat and Kane on 1B. So, but yeah, another player that I'm definitely interested in for the Red Wings. Vladimir Tarasenko, another guy whose name seems to be on the trade block constantly in recent years. I mean, he's had a kind of a resurgent stretch of play here as of late. He seems to be finding his game at the right time for the Ottawa Senators. I mean, this is a guy who is super, super good in his days with the Blues, was not very good with the Rangers last year. 21 points in 31 games was fine. This year, 38 points in 55 games for the Senators, not great. He's one of the more interesting names on this list for me, because I do feel like there's still like a lot of game here, and we just haven't really seen it. His own percentage is currently at 48%. He's probably a name that I would pick up if he's available in my league and hold on to into the trade deadline, just to see where he goes. Whether it's reunites with the New York Rangers and ends up on the top line with Zibanejad and Kreider, I think that's possible. And obviously it didn't work out great last year, but it could this year. So he is probably of this list. Like I'm more interested in him than I am in Henrique and Rielly Smith moving forward. Would you guys agree, Beep?
Is there anyone else in this list who could maybe push the money needle more than Tarasenko too at this point with these last little stretch here? If he goes to a contender and he really balls out, he can kind of catch a big contract in that, not big, but at least bigger than expected with what he's doing in Ottawa. His plan for sure was to go to Ottawa, you know, put up points in a dangerous top six and get out of there and make a ton of money the next year off a bridge deal. And that's not quite working that way, or probably this where they don't do as good. He gets traded to a contender and it's someone who fits very well in the top sixes. I like what you said. I think you really got to keep an eye as we head into the deadline or the trade deadline next week, maybe on Thursday, if you have an extra spot, grab Tarasenko. His value could definitely go up. I think if he goes to the right squad, if he finds his way on a power play, that's a little bit better, a couple things, but no, I definitely like keeping an eye on him because, you know, money drives a man and he might be going crazy if he gets traded to the right spot. And I'd be down with that. I'm cool with that. D, how do you feel about a nice little Tarasenko wheel and deal to somewhere else?
Yeah, I think it's an obvious one for a guy whose value could obviously improve. I really don't see how it could be any worse. He's playing just 16 minutes a night. Senators power play has been pretty dreadful this year, just 16.6% on the season. So he's going to probably end up in a better spot no matter where he goes. So definitely a guy that I think is worth holding on to at this point, just seeing how the deadline plays out.
And the final name on the list, pretty similar to Vladimir Tarasenko, is Jordan Eberle of the Seattle Kraken. Again, not a name that's 100% going to be moved, but another guy who's seemingly increasing his trade value by the day. 5 goals in his last 5 games. That top line in Seattle is starting to heat up. I think that they're probably envisioning going on a run and getting into the playoffs still. But Eberle's name has surfaced in many circles, whether it's the Edmonton Oilers or elsewhere. He is somebody that, again, like Tarasenko, is probably worth a speculative ad. One, just because he's hot right now, and you might as well ride that out while that's going on. But then number two, he could certainly see a bump in value. The Kraken, as it stands right now, 2 games in hand on the Nashville Predators, 7 points out of the playoffs. So it's going to be a tough battle for them down the stretch. I do think that Eberle would make sense moving. And, if he ends up back with a reunion in Edmonton and ends up on a line in that top 6, he's certainly somebody that could be dangerous in the second half of the season. So Tarasenko and Eberle, 2 names that I'm definitely scooping on the waiver wire in hopes of better things in a week from now. D, how do you feel about Jordan Eberle?
I like it. I'm with you. I think he's worth holding on to. I don't know if it's like as automatic they end up in a better spot simply because he gets a lot of minutes in Seattle, but there is room for that upside to grow for sure. I don't think it's as automatic as Tarasenko. If he were to end up back in Edmonton, obviously that's kind of the dream spot for anyone to fall into right now, any of these targets that we've talked about. So there's enough plausible scenarios where you could really see that upside taking off. So I'm with you. He's definitely a guy to stash and play in the meantime, ride out that hot streak, like you said, and then hope he ends up in the right spot. And if not, you just drop him next week.
Yeah, my thing is, say you don't get Tarasenko as your grab, then go Eberle. I'm cool with that. I was about to ask you guys the same question, but D already made that point by what he stated. Brock, you kind of in the same boat. Grab Tarasenko first, go Eberle second if you're just kind of being that guy who's trying to jump above.
Honestly, I would probably pick up Eberle first just because he's actually productive right now. You might get a decent week out of him, and both these guys could get traded to shittier situations next week and it might not matter much. So yeah, I think that maybe I would go Eberle first, but yeah, I think it's close. I don't think you can really go wrong. I think they're pretty similar players right now. I think they're pretty similar players moving forward. And then obviously where they land will be make a big difference on how much value they have moving forward after that. But that is going to do it for our mini trade deadline preview. We'll probably dive into a lot of these names again next week if we hear some more chatter, if some players have already moved. We'll talk about the kind of repercussions of those deals. We would love to have broken down tonight's trade, but I do not think that no matter where he got traded, it could have been to the moon. And Chris Tanev's fantasy value probably wouldn't have changed too much. He is great in Bangor. And that is it. He will block 400 shots a year, but that is about all you're going to get. So without further ado, we will not go over to D for D's keepers, but in fact, we will go to him for D's streamers. Take it away, D.
All right, so we got 3 games Friday, 13 on Saturday, 6 on Sunday. So of course, as always, we're looking at those teams playing on Friday and Sunday. We got 4 teams to go through. Kicking us off are the Anaheim Ducks. They are at home for both games this weekend, Friday versus the Devils, and then the Canucks on Sunday. Not the best matchup on Sunday, but Devils obviously can get got in terms of goals against with the goaltending that they've had this year. So Mason McTavish, 43% owned, not a great chance that he's out there, but I think he's one of the top streaming targets that's going to be available if he is this weekend. A guy that you certainly want to move for. He's got 4 goals, 4 assists in his last 6 games, 18 shots on goal while playing just over 60 minutes a night. So hopefully that usage continues to grow, not just throughout this weekend, but the rest of the season, because I think he's a great pickup and could add a lot of value to your playoff push. Second line and power play unit right now. And obviously, as we already talked about, Adam Henrik up next, if he were to get moved, would open up another spot and a lot more minutes for McTavish to consume the rest of the season. But Henrik himself, center left wing eligible, 29% owned. Like I talked about earlier, he's been productive for the better part of 2 months now. 6 goals, 13 assists in his last 20 games, 46 shots on goal in that stretch, 18 minutes, 57 seconds average time on ice as well. First line and top power play unit. He's a great option this weekend, just out of usage alone. And then Ryan Strome, left wing, right wing eligible, 8% owned, 4 goals, 4 assists in his last 10, 21 shots on goal, 15-59 average time on ice. Third line, but first power play unit. So a little bit of upside there in terms of assists, but that shot volume obviously going to cap his goal scoring. So more of a deep league target for me. And then Leo Carlson, really not that interested in, surprisingly enough. First line, second power play unit. He hasn't scored since January 5th, just 38 shots on goal in that 22-game drought while playing still over 18 minutes a night. So a lot of talent there, but I don't know if it's all going to come together for him quite yet this season. So I'm actually probably fading Leo Carlson this weekend, but I felt he still needed a mention because I'm sure our listeners would have been wondering why his name didn't get brought up otherwise, but he's ice cold, so that's why. And then moving on, we got the Coyotes. They're in Ottawa on Friday, in Washington on Sunday. You already know we're going to get some two pretty familiar names dropped here. Your boy Nick Schmaltz, center right wing eligible, 19% owned. He's heating back up of late, 2 goals, 2 assists in his last 4, playing over 19 minutes a night. The biggest issue here is the injury to Clayton Keller, which severely hampers his upside, so we'll have to see. We're not quite sure what his status is going to be this weekend. Doesn't look good, I'll tell you that much. But Schmaltz, I think, is worth a roll of the dice either way, especially in a pair of relatively good matchups for the Coyotes and the Senators and Capitals. And then, of course, we got to give out some love to Matias Michelli, left wing, 6% owned, second line, first power play unit, the most underutilized playmaker in the league. 2 goals, 3 assists in his last 5 games while playing over 18 minutes a night, so that ice time's creeping up. Shot volume is always going to cap his goal scoring upside, but you know, as sure of a bet as any of all these names we're going to talk about to add to your assist totals this weekend. And then moving on, we got the Devils. They are in Anaheim on Friday, nice, in LA on Sunday, not as nice, but issue here that we see a lot of times with the better teams in the streaming segments, just not a lot of quality options widely available in that top 6. Dawson Mercer, center right wing eligible, 21% owned, and Andre Palat, left wing, 3% owned, are your best bets, but I do think there are better options out there this weekend, despite how tempting the matchup in Anaheim might be. The two have combined for just 3 points in their last 5 games. Not great. Mercer dropped back down to the third line as well, so I'm really not too interested in the Devils, assuming you're not in a shallower league and all the big names are already scooped up. If you're in a shallower league, Timo Meier's out there. You know, obviously he's worth a roll of the dice. Capitals hosting the Flyers on Friday before hosting the Coyotes on Sunday. So not a bad matchup spread by any means of the imagination. Dylan Strome, center eligible, 38% owned. He's been on a tear this past month. He's got 5 goals and 10 assists in his last 13 games, 33 shots on goal, which is great to see out of him. And an average time on ice of 18 minutes and 32 seconds. He's playing with Ovechkin and Tom Wilson on the Capitals' first line right now, as well as that top power play unit. So certainly one of the top streaming options this weekend, if available. 62% of leagues, he's still out there. So give a check for Dylan Strome. And then Max Pacioretty, left wing, 12% owned. He's really starting to find his form. He's got 2 goals, 3 assists in his last 6 games, 16 shots on goal, despite playing less than 13 and a half minutes a night. I'd expect him to start earning more ice time sooner than later, now that he's really rounding into form and shape to being out for so long. But either way, I'm happy to bet on that shot volume this weekend. Third line, second power play unit. And then moving on in goal, that's going to do it for the Skaters. Just a few names, really a couple to mention here, and then one more of a cursory look. But the Jets are in Carolina on Saturday, in Buffalo on Sunday. Hellebuck will almost certainly get the Hurricanes on Saturday, which leaves Laurent Boursois to face the Sabres in an excellent matchup on Sunday. It's as good of a matchup as you could really realistically hope for. The Jets are one of the best defensive teams in the NHL. Boursois has been outstanding when called upon this season. He's got a 9-4-2 record to go along with a 2.26 goals against average and a 9.22 save percentage, just 19% owned. And that's even a little inflated due to him getting the start on Tuesday. So I'd expect that to drop back down a bit ahead of the weekend. And then Calvin Pekard may get to face the Penguins on Sunday. I'm not entirely convinced he gets that game and not the Saturday. He's just 8% owned. The Oilers do have an afternoon game in Seattle on Saturday. It's not uncommon for a backup to get the front end of a weekend back-to-back when it's an afternoon game. The Oilers will have just played less than 48 hours before that on Thursday night. So I would definitely wait to see if Jeff Skinner is confirmed on Saturday before moving to grab Pekard ahead of Sunday's game against the Penguins, where, of course, the Oilers will be favored. And other than that, really the only other potential favorable spot start you might be able to find on your wire in shallower leagues or in leagues where managers have just grown too impatient with Philip Gustafson and or Marc-Andre Fleury. They're both over that 50% ownership mark, but I've seen them out there in a lot of leagues. Whoever gets the nod on Sunday will get a delicious home matchup against the Sharks. So just a couple of names to keep an eye out there. Obviously trickier because they're above 50% ownership and trickier to project how that back-to-back is going to go in terms of who gets what start. But if the projected starter is out there for Sunday, obviously that's going to be a smash and grab to try and save your matchup and push you over the edge this weekend.
just to confirm, it will be Stuart Skinner who would get the nod for the Edmonton Oilers, not Jeff Skinner. But just circling back to Laurent Brossoit, as good as his numbers have been, D, as you outlined, if you take a look at just his last 10 starts, he has been unbelievable. 7-2-1 with a 940 save percentage. Just absolutely bonkers numbers from one of the most fun names in the league to pronounce, Laurent Brossoit. And that is going to do it for these streamers. That is also going to do it for season 9, episode 33 of the DFO Fantasy Podcast. Thank you guys, as always, for tuning in. I'm your host, Brock Segui. We had Dylan DeBerthy and Michael Bisbondi with us today. We'll see you guys back here next week.
It's all hope for a juicy trade deadline from the NHL.
Peace.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.